Hey, how you doing, everyone? We are back with another beautiful Wheel Wednesday podcast. I am Luis from Koenig Wheels, and this is...
I'm Rich.
So we're glad to have you guys back. Just a quick stuff that we want to let you know about. Last week, we actually had our boy Derek Madison on the podcast. If you haven't gotten to check that one out yet, go check that out. That podcast is really cool. That's my boy, man. And every time we have a conversation with him, it's always a good one. And yeah, man, the dude has also been on a tear. He's been doing great this year. So it's definitely a podcast to go check out. And I hope that you guys can go do that, as well as we had an episode of The Hype Is Right drop last Friday. That was honestly one of the funniest, coolest videos that we've done in a long time. So definitely go check that out. As well as this Friday, we're going to be dropping a Carnatomy of the guest that we're going to have today. Basically, he's just going to give us a walk around of his car, because we actually went out to Lime Rock this weekend, which from your, you know, this is the first time you went to a grid life. How did you feel about it?
I thought it was really cool. Yeah. You know, meeting Tom and, you know, his team and everyone like that, it was a good time. Me and Max went up there. We had a good time. We got to do a couple of walk-arounds with some cool people. And everyone's going to be able to see Tom's S2000 this Friday.
Yeah, man. Yeah. All right. So, well, without further ado, we're going to introduce our guest, which he is a multi-SCCA solo champion. He is also a world challenge champion, two-time world challenge champion, and also just on a tear in grid life right now, basically number one in his class, the one and only Tom O'Gorman.
Woo! Here we go. Woo!
There he is. Oh, look at the introduction. There's a whole intro right now, Tom, that you're missing out on, where basically it's just you being highlighted and killing the game.
Oh, that's awesome. How's it going, guys?
Thanks. Everything's good, man. How's everything on your side?
Man, it's been pretty incredible. I can't remember actually when the last time I was on here. I know I already had my first S2000.
Yes.
And that was like 10 years ago, even though it was probably 1 year maybe.
Yeah. Well, and, we were just looking at it. I think it was 2 years ago, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Because it feel like we had just had that conversation. Obviously, for you, you know, it feels a lot longer. But yeah. A lot has changed from that time. I know that for a fact.
Lots has changed, but it's been surreal. Like I can't even believe how good it's been going recently. So I have to like knock on wood and stuff every time I think about it.
So let's get into it, just because I kind of want to talk about exactly that road from the last time we had that podcast you till now, because a lot literally has changed. So basically, tell us what went down at Road America to now having, well, which most people, you know, if you're looking at it from a different perspective, they don't know that it's a totally different chassis that you're on, totally different car. But tell us about what led you to where you are now with this new build.
Sure. Well, for a little bit of context, I race in GridLife Touring Cup with GridLife, which is their wheel-to-wheel race series. So we're like, you know, drop the green flag, wheel-to-wheel racing on road courses. We do four races a weekend. It's like super intense, super fun to watch. So if you haven't seen it before, you should definitely like go to YouTube and find the streams where they have the races. But I did about a 5-year stint in pro racing for Honda. And when that ended, I bought a Honda S2000 to race with GridLife. And after like a year and a half of toiling away and trying to learn how to do it on my own, and then getting involved with ASM and Andy helping me get the car like really running well, and started to win some races with it, and things were going really, really well, to the point that I was like kind of an outside shot to win last year's championship. If either Jeremy Swenson or Eric Coutil had a bad weekend, it would have been kind of fallen into my lap. So we were racing at Road America. This class is all power to weight, and we realized we were like hitting a drag problem. So we had like, you know, all the power and the weight was right, but the drag was bad. So I took all the wings off the car. I put some side skirts on it, put an air dam on it, just tried to make it like a bullet in a straight line, mm-hmm. kind of like James Houghton's car is designed to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Those are the wheels he runs, right?
Right behind. That's right. You. He has the heliograms right here. Right?
Yep. So I tried to do that treatment, and the setup that I built was really bad. I ended up crashing the car at turn 13 on a practice day, about 80 miles an hour into a concrete wall, and ended that chassis's life right on the spot. But I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I kind of thought like I'm done racing for a little while, because it was my car that I crashed. I can't just like get another one. But I did buy another rolling shell really, really quickly. And in the maybe 2 or 3 months that we had the rolling shell kind of sitting, Andy decided, like, let's just build it. Mm. Let's just make it run. Let's get it out. Let's not wait. Where it probably would have taken me a year or more to get it really running. So we basically pulled a ton of stuff, anything salvageable off my old car. We pulled everything off of his shelves that was applicable to the new car. And in like 3 weeks, the car went from a complete rolling shell, or a very incomplete rolling shell, I guess, to a fully caged running race car, and debuted at COTA earlier this year. And then that chassis has basically become now, I think it's the winningest car in GLTC, at least this season. We've won almost 20 of 32 races.
It's just crazy. Like,
the car is invincible as far as I'm concerned. It's one of the best cars I've ever driven. But yeah, it's been a journey to get it there.
So, and that's actually a good segue into what I wanted to kind of ask you about with when it comes to Andy Smedegaard and your relationship with ASM. Like, so where did that come from? Because I don't know if it was an existing relationship that you had when we first had our first interview. Is that something new, or is that something that already existed and it just kind of rolled into this new chassis and you guys building this up? Because I know there was a lot of changes with the chassis, with this build, like you said, with Arrow and all that. Is that with Andy helping you out and all that? Is that how that works out?
Kind of. When I bought my first S2000, I'm not a mechanical person, like, at all. I don't understand cars. I'm not really that interested in cars in like the mechanics of how they work. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I don't find how does an engine work interesting. That's not like what I'm gravitated toward. I want to drive it, right?
Yeah.
And so I kind of don't know what I'm doing. So when I bought my own car, it was like, I got to learn how to do all this again. And I was just, it was bad. It was just really bad. I didn't understand how to troubleshoot it, shoot any problems. I kept having kind of weirder problems that were not super standard to diagnose, like the engine harness overheated over time and like all of the connectors fell apart. And I'm like, how am I supposed to know that? Anyway, so Andy was a resource for me at that point. He kind of, at that point, they've already were established as like S2000 masters. They were running one K-swapped S2, and then they had a couple other S2000s in the fleet. And I would just bug him on Facebook Messenger probably more than I should have, and he would help me out when he could, or, you know, he helped me out at trackside a little bit. But over that period, we kind of just stayed in touch more and more and more. And then my engine blew up at the end of 2020. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of swooped in and was like, we're going to make your car run. Like, this is painful for me to watch you deal with all this.
Yeah.
So I brought my car up to him in Wisconsin. At the time, I was living in Chicago. And that kind of just became like a symbiotic relationship where we realized we work in the same industry. We come at it from very different angles because he runs his race shop. He can build the cars, and he has this event hosting background where they started the local sports car club, and he just like eats, sleeps and breathes it the same way I do. Mm. And then I come at it from the driver coach realm. And, you know, I got to do some professional driving in pro racing. So we have this whole spectrum covered of like what we can do and what we can accomplish. And we have very similar goals, and it just kind of realized like we can really become this like kind of powerhouse within grassroots racing where we can do everything. We can build you a car. We can make you a better driver. We can put on an event for you to come drive at, anything in the realm or all at once. Mm-hmm. So I ended up actually moving up to Wisconsin last winter. So oh, now nice. I live, like, the shop is like 3/4 of a mile that way.
Nice, nice.
I go there most days when I'm here, and I drive the trucks to the events with him. And I try to carry my weight as much as possible. I feel like I need him a lot more than he needs me most of the time, but.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah.
And just like, we started all the ASM social media, try to grow that, start making some YouTube videos, just like anything we can do to blow ourselves up, I guess.
For sure, for sure. So, because now that we have Rich here too, by the way, Rich is new on the marketing team, by the way, and I know you met him out in Lime Rock and whatnot. And
yeah.
One of the things that I kind of wanted to talk about is kind of your journey, because your journey is a very, like, in-depth journey, and also very interesting to me as a fan of you, you know, how you've gone from, you know, to where you started to where you are now. Now, not to go too in depth into it, because I feel like it's such a long story, but and we probably covered a lot of it the last time we had this interview, but give us a quick synopsis of where you started to, like, kind of like the key points to where you are now in GLT, you know, going into GLTC? And, you know, feel free to always end it when, because I know there's a lot, that's a big question to ask. So just give us a quick synopsis of basically Tom O'Gorman's race car driving life and how it starts.
Sure. So I grew up as a racing fan, and I always had like racing video games, race, you know, Hot Wheels cars, whatever, all that stuff was like, it's everything that I ever wanted to do. And I started autocrossing when I was 16. I did autocross for about 7 years, really, really deep, started going to like nationals and all the biggest SCCA events. And after I won my first national championship after 7 years of doing that, and realized that I could either keep doing that forever or kind of pivot towards driving on racetracks. So I bought a road racing car, got my road racing license in the first year, and really wanted to like take that as far as I could. And after 1 year of club racing, I did a crowdfunding campaign and bought a pro racing car. It was a Honda Fit, so it wasn't anything fancy, but the crowdfund campaign got me into Pirelli World Challenge to do my first couple of pro races, where I met Honda. And my relationship with Honda, by chance or coincidence, whatever, got really strong really fast. They started putting me in cars, and I got to race the new Civic Si when that came out in 2016-17. And then I got to start racing TCR Civic Type Rs. They had me testing the NSX GT3, and that was my full-time job.
Yep.
Was racing for Honda. So that would have been like 2015 through 2020. And then in that time, GLTC and GridLife were growing huge. And I would always go to the events, and I'd watch all my friends race. And like, I never had my own car, but it was fun. It's what I wanted to do if I had my own budget. So when the Honda stuff dried up, I got my own GLTC car. And that was like the restart of my racing career almost, after, you know, the pro racing stuff had to end. And it was the series I've always wanted to race in. I was never like that captured by any other club racing. I really, really, really wanted to pro race. And then I'm pro racing, watching GLTC, going like, I want to do that. And now I get to. That's kind of how I ended up here.
And this is just an interesting thing for me, because, you know, I know the answer to it. But obviously I need to ask, just because I think it's an interesting thing. What made you get into an S2K so that you can get into these type of racing series? Like, what, how did that happen? Where'd you find it? Who, you know, how does that happen?
Yeah. Honestly, I had a Honda Loner streetcar, and I had a Camaro that I freaking loved. That was like my fun car and my street car. And after my Honda contract lapsed, and I was basically unemployed, I had to give the Honda vehicle back. And then I had this Camaro, and I'm like, I don't need this. This is a stupid street car to have. Like, I'll just sell this thing and get something half. So I sold the Camaro and I bought an S2000, like a street car. Mm-hmm. And pretty much the day I bought that street car, a friend of mine messaged me and was like, hey, I didn't know you're looking for S2s, but there's a guy maybe selling his race car. If you want a race car, you can buy it. And 3 days later, I bought that race car. So it was like very coincidental, but it was like right place, right time, right price. And I sold the street car for what I bought for it. And I bought the race car for what I bought the street car for. So it was just like pivoted that around. And then I bought a cheap tow vehicle and a cheap trailer. And that was how I started with it. But I'd like to say I picked an S2000 on purpose, like very strategically, but I kind of didn't. I just, it happened to be what I wanted for the street, and then a race one popped up.
Yeah. Nice. That's really cool, man. So, since the last time we spoke, I know Tomo driving instructing has changed a lot. I feel like you've grown a lot also with that as well. I noticed that you've also teamed up with ASM, and you're offering different types of courses when it comes to this, even online stuff that we've noticed that you've been doing. Tell us a little bit about that, and tell us a little bit about the Tomo driving and whatnot.
Yeah. So after my pro racing job basically ended, I was like, I got to figure out how to work. I don't really have a lot of practical work experience. I don't want to just go get a desk job. So what do I do? And one thing that I've been doing for a long time is driver coaching, but usually pretty informally, or just like as a one-off job instructing for this school here or there. And I kind of realized like that's the easiest way, not the easiest, but the most plug and play of the things that I could do for a living. It's like I could start my own coaching business. So I started to kind of pull from the experiences of doing the driver coaching at different tracks and different events and different schools and figuring out like what's going to work best for me. And the most common driver coaching model is a private coach that you hire for the day. They come to the track. It's pretty expensive. You pay them like a full day rate. They give you all their attention. You get all of the, you know, the data, the video, the review. They watch you on track. They're your companion on the whole day, whether you're on or off the track. Mm-hmm. And because that's expensive, a lot of our grassroots friends can't really afford that. So I wanted to build, I do that. And there are people who absolutely that's super beneficial if you can pull it off. But I wanted to build models that were affordable for our friends that maybe have a couple $100 to go a little bit faster. And instead of like buying a new part, they're going to buy a little bit of investment in themselves, or, you know, they're going to sleep in their car instead of getting a hotel and pay for a weekend of coaching to get a little bit better. I kind of wanted to accommodate that because I feel like that's what I would have needed if I was getting a coach when I was 17. I couldn't afford $1,000 a day, but I could afford 200 maybe. So what I built is what I call my trackside coaching, where it's all the events I already go to, all the Grid Life events, so some SCCA events, all this other stuff. And when I'm on the ground, I'll work with a small group of people that are already at that event as well to try to make sure that they can maximize their event, but also can grow as a driver over time. So there are drivers I work with once, there are drivers I've worked with the entire Grid Life season, every event. And it's designed to be a little bit more of a quantity than a, you know, I'm not working with just one person. I get to work with 5 to 7 people. So it helps me cover my costs a little bit. It's a little bit better for me business-wise, but it's also totally dedicated to those people when I'm at the track, unless I'm sitting in my car. So, you know, if you don't see me driving my GLTC car, you probably won't see me much because I'm in the trailer working with another driver, or, you know, kind of working my way around the paddock, finding my clients.
For sure.
And then I also do remote coaching where I don't even go to the track. I kind of call in the Tuesday before and the Tuesday after, and we talk about going into the event. We'll talk through the track. We'll talk through some goals during your event. You can apply that as much as possible. And then the Tuesday after, as an example, we'll call and we'll review video, we'll review data and figure out, where were your successes? Where were the things you can continue to work on? And I try to design that around, you know, working at least 3 to 5 times together so that we can measure growth and actually kind of quantify, are you improving as a driver? Are we building your ability to learn on your own? Because it takes time, it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of like instant feedback. So if we're not doing it in a timely manner, then it's going to be tougher to learn too. So I'm kind of learning all of the different ways those models work. I'm kind of learning how to be an educator more than, I know the driving part, but the educating somebody else, I'm kind of learning my teaching methods more so than my driving methods. The rest of it is like, business management and time management and stuff like that. It's a lot of the learning process for sure.
Cool. Sorry if you had mentioned it. So, and you also do like private lessons as well and stuff like that. And is that just something like kind of like, how does that, like, do you have to come out to you, or is it just, you know, you offer it obviously through online or whatnot? How does that work? Or do you go to a track? Do you have somewhere that you work from?
Yeah, the full private coaching model, like I go to the event you want me to come to.
I don't go myself.
I don't bring my car. I literally just show up with all of my coaching tools.
That's right.
And
okay.
Focus on the other driver. So that's kind of like part of it is setting expectations, right? Like if you're working with me as one of 7 drivers on a Grid Life weekend, I have to set the expectation that first I'm competing, and that is only, you know, it's got my schedule fixed to an extent. When I'm not competing, my bandwidth is 100% on you guys, but there's 7 of you. So I have a schedule built where I try to make sure that no one's time is getting wasted. But I also have to manage my own time pretty strategically, or else I get behind, or, you know, my worst nightmare would be to tell someone, I just don't have time right now. That's not acceptable to me because it's my job, is for me to have time for them. So it's been a little bit of, like, I don't know anybody else that coaches in that way. So I'm kind of building my own little coaching industry from that model. I have to figure out if it's going to work or not. So far, I think it's been working, but it kind of dialing in the balance of quantity and quality to make sure that I'm not biting off too much, but I'm also delivering a good product for those drivers.
Of course.
You know, it's really cool because it's not like, realistically, there's not many people offering what you're offering. And I think it's really cool that, especially someone with so much accolade, kind of being able to kind of be hands-on with you and give you direction on something that's honestly really difficult and competitive, man. So kudos to you to even attempting it and obviously being successful in it. But another thing that I find very interesting is kind of the online stuff that you've been doing recently, which is the track tips and the track breakdown videos and stuff like that. When did you start that? And tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do there. Is it something that's more directional towards kind of doing in-person stuff, or is that just you putting your brand out there?
Sure. That actually grew out of something Andy was doing already. So Andy had on a channel called Boosted Films. Boosted Films, as our buddy Paul, he would make these videos with Andy for, they were called ASM Track Tips. And they pretty much did them for all of the tracks that Andy knows pretty well. So they had already done, you know, like the Autobahns and the Gingermans and the Road Atlantas, you know, kind of the stuff that they visited. But in my experience as a driver, I've gotten to visit all these other tracks that he had not been to yet. So when I came into the ASM group and I started kind of realizing the places where I could build the ASM brand that were not already tapped out, one of them is like, well, I have at least 24 other tracks on this track tips list that I could fill in. So we just started filming a bunch of track tips videos for all the tracks I've been to that either Andy or someone else hadn't been to yet. So now we went from kind of the Midwest typical tracks that he mastered and known really well to now we have like Laguna Seca and Mosport and Lime Rock and all these tracks that I got to go to for either pro racing or different stuff. That now I think we pretty much have every major US track across the country covered for a track tips video. And I guess I didn't think about it strategically, like, what is this for? It just seemed like we should do that.
Yeah.
There was a point we were going to maybe put them like you buy each video or like there is a subscription service or something. And it was like, you know what? Let's just put them out there. Let it be marketing for coaching, but also just be a way that ASM is a, what do you call that? When you're a master in the field, like when you're seeking information in motorsports, who do you go to? Come to ASM. Cause we know, whether it's track tips or S2000 swaps or anything, like
I think putting the videos out there on YouTube, I think putting them out there for free for people to watch, I think it's a really good idea because then someone can see what you guys have to say, whether it's you or Andy, and if those free tips on the track work for them, they're gonna say these guys know what they're talking about. I really want to maybe get in front of them and do a little more with that. I think that might kind of also translate to some future clients for your the private coaching for Tomo Coaching.
No, yeah, for definitely. Sure. It's like, because even I'm thinking about it. So entertain me here, Tom, because, don't make too much fun of me here. But I'm blanking on my own car here.
Ford Fiesta.
I have a Ford Fiesta that I'm thinking about it. So mind you, it's a thinking about autocrossing, and the thing is, it's just one of those things that it's like, you don't know really where to start when you've never done it. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, there's, luckily, me being able to work here and stuff like that and having conversations with cool people like yourself, there's obviously people I can ask advice for, but sometimes it's not that easy. Maybe you're busy or maybe other people are busy that I know and whatnot. And, giving tips to someone who's just starting is not as easy as being like, having something like yourself, a service like yourself where we can kind of say like, hey, or go on YouTube and starter tips, because sometimes having that conversation is a little difficult. Having those starter tips being there is honestly very helpful for the person who doesn't know where to go, doesn't know how to start. It's a helpful thing to do. Even the tracks, like doing the track things. Maybe I'm going to go to Lime Rock and I'm like, I don't know anything about Lime Rock. All of a sudden, I fall into your video and it's giving me a whole layout on how it works. And that's really helpful, dude.
I think there's something I've seen over the last like 5 to 7 years that like the gatekeeping of motorsports has fallen down quite a bit. So before it was like there was autocross, but it's not easy to just like immerse into and understand. Or there are track days, but how do you find them? Or, there's always an instructor immediately put with you to babysit you. There was never a lot of like, we're just going to break down the barrier of entry to be as minimal as possible so that it's easy and fun and relatable and you can just like come in and be safe but enjoy yourself. And I feel like overall, like motorsports as an industry in the last 5 to 7 years has like, let's stop protecting this sacred thing that we want you to feel like you don't really relate to. Like, let's make it as relatable as possible. Let's make it as easy and possible to get involved in and make as many people as want to like be able to show up.
Yeah.
Which I think like, duh, why wouldn't you do that? But I remember my first autocross events, it was just like overwhelmed. It didn't feel like a lot of people wanted to help. It was very, very like just crash course learning. Like, if I could make somebody else's experience getting in either easier or more fun or a little bit safer because they're a little bit better educated, all of that is like a huge win, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. So what I wanted to ask is, like, as far as like when it comes to Tomo coaching, is it just you specifically by yourself, or do you have like other instructors that are working under you? How does that, is it just a Tom O'Gorman, you get him when you're working, when you join the team?
Yeah, it's just me right now. This is my first year kind of having been doing it formally. So I spent 2020 and 2021 like doing it under the table, a little, not under the table, but like very informally, word of mouth, just trying to like figure out can I even handle doing this? Is this something I want to do? Or do I need to like go get a desk job? And over those 2 years is where I came up with those three different coaching models. And I learned a lot of strategies that I feel very confident in mind and time management and the way I communicate the information, the way I can kind of read what the person needs and adjust to them. So like one driver may have this whole set of vocabulary that they get, and then another driver doesn't know any of that vocabulary. So I have to like completely take this race car driver verbiage out of my language and just talk to them at a level they understand. I spent like 2 years honing on that a little bit before I even just said like Tomo coaching is a thing. So the day that I like announced the business earlier this winter and formalized it, and it was on a website and it's marketed, that was like the most stressful day.
I could imagine.
It was just like, this is real. From this point on, this is real. This is my job. There's a tax ID number associated with it.
Hell,
there's
yeah. Yeah.
Like all of that stuff was like, all right.
That's awesome, man.
But yeah, I'm still learning and it's still my first year. So right now I don't have any mini coaches or any auxiliary people. It's just me.
That's awesome. Well, so, all right. So another thing I wanted to kind of get into is, you know, let's talk about what's going on right now. So my boys here, mm-hmm. they got to see you at work, man. They went to Lime Rock. They got to see you finish first place. You're on a tear right now. You're the number one on the leading boards when it comes to GLTC. One of the things I wanted to know is the things that you can tell us, what are some of the changes that you guys have done this with this S2000, this build specifically, that you can at least tell us about that you have changed from the last, although you kind of briefly kind of told us, but kind of going into depth of why you feel this year is more, like, not that it's more successful, but meaning it's more smooth, I think. You know, it's running more smoothly. What are those changes that you guys made in this season as compared to the last?
So last year, I did most of the season in my own car before I crashed it. And that old car just was never quite right. It was like, even the days that it was good and fast, like you could blindfold me and put me in all the ASM cars and I would have been like, that was five S2000s. And then like, I don't know what that one was, but it was good, but it wasn't the same car. Like it was just a little left field all the time. And it was felt like the front end and the rear were like disconnected. So like the front end would respond one way, but the rear end would be on a delay and respond a different way. It was just, I don't know what it was, but to be honest, there's a silver lining in having crashed it because I feel like I would have been dealing with it for the rest of however long. And I don't know that it really wanted to be a race car anymore because it was like a 14 year old build. So starting with this new one, we're like, we're going to build the ultimate, you know, we're starting as scratch as possible. There's literally just like rolling suspension and brakes on this chassis. So even starting with the cage, we built the cage into the front shock towers. The cage is, you know, ideally there to strengthen the chassis as much as possible, connect the front and the rear as much as possible. So our buddy Artsum built the cage with all of the check marks of like, do you want all of these like little touches that are good for that? So even just from the root, we started with that. A lot of the stuff that went on the first round build of this car was kind of similar to my old car. And it also wasn't awesome. It was better, but it was not like, you know, we were still on pretty basic shocks. We were still on pretty basic aero that were allowed in the class. Like we're allowed to build an under tray that goes back to the front axle, if that makes sense. So
yep.
about a splitter. A splitter is designed to make front downforce, but really about 70 to 80% of the effectiveness of the splitter is just the flat tray that goes back to the axle. Mm. So we don't have the splitter, but we have the under tray now on the car, and just little things like that.
Yeah.
It started to really add up. But the big change was getting some like really proper race shocks. We went to some Moton double adjustable shocks, and the under tray both went on at the same time. And the car went from like, it was capable of winning races. I had won some races, and then that was at Autobahn. And I've won 14 of the last 16 races since that change. So I feel like there's definitely no secrets with it. It's basically like all of the other cars have most of what my car has, but my car has all of it and it has the best of it, whether it's the shock brand or the diff or the aero, or the brakes, like all of it is the best we know of what that works. And I think just piecing that all together, I can't believe how fast our cars are. Like, yeah, we're going so much faster than we should. Every new track we go to, people from NASA or people from SCCA are like, you did what lap time on street tires? What?
Yeah.
Like, but the sum of the parts just created this. I basically say it's like a S2000 GT3 car. It's like bonkers, yeah, how the car is. So once we made those changes and kind of built this ultimate, like, I got little chills talking about it.
Nice.
Got to that point, it was like, I've been dealing with handling issues and with cars I'm not happy with for a year and a half, 2 years, all of my own doing, right? It was my car. So now that it's good, there's no excuse for me not to be able to win races. Like, it's just on me. So if I don't win a race, that's like my own fault now, yeah, which is a really nice spot to be in. I love that the excuse of the car is gone from a driving perspective, but it's also like a testament to the ASM like knowledge pool. Like, over the last 5 years for S2000s, we've created this car, and now I think Andy's finished second most of those races. Our buddy Matt Waldbaum is in the top five every single time. We just did that same kind of, we're calling it like an Evo kit on the ASM S2000s. Our buddy Zach just got all of that stuff done to his car too. So it's like all not necessary, but as soon as you kind of, if you get as close to that as possible, all of a sudden you have this ridiculous car. And Zach had just driven it for the first time at Lime Rock, and he kept coming up saying, do you have an awesome race car? Because I have an awesome race car. Hey, I told you how awesome my race car is. It's so awesome. Like, he was stoked about it the same way I was when we finished mine. So
yeah.
I think it's really down to those small details. Like, do you have the off the shelf eBay shocks, or do you have like full proper two way Moton race shocks? Mm-hmm. And I never would have thought that would have been like a huge change that it was, but it was. So when you start to nitpick those details on the level we're competing at, it all adds up really quick.
Yeah, and that's one of the, actually, what I wanted to kind of talk about when it comes to these races. And obviously, Lime Rock is one of those ones. Like, for example, to me, two of my favorite drivers is yourself and Eric Coutel, you know, and Eric Coutel coming back with his build and whatnot. When you're on that track, and, you know, not to kind of stir the pot. That's the right thing he said. Max said it. You could hear it. Not to stir the pot a little bit. But when you're on that track, who are you looking for when you're looking to your left or your right? Because I need to stir the pot a little bit here. I know you guys, there's a little bit of competitiveness there, and I love it. And I kind of have to stir it a little bit, so.
First of all, I'm like so freaking stoked that Eric's back, because Eric's one of my absolute best friends. Like, I would go to his house when I lived in Cincinnati. He lived in Columbus.
That's right.
I would go weekends and hang it. Like, he was the benchmark when I came in with my first car, and I was finishing 17th, and he's winning races. Like, man, I can't wait to be able to like be a thorn in your side, Eric. And
as you are,
right? I was getting there, and then both of us, literally at Road America, within 2 weeks of each other, both totaled our cars.
That's right.
So it was like we kind of went through this journey together, right? And now that he's finally back, it's like so freaking cool. And the car is like fast out of the box, which is not like perfect fast, but it's pretty damn good. Yeah. So, I mean, Eric was always one. The first one for me is Andy, because we're driving basically the same car.
That's right.
So like, if Andy's beating me and I'm in, you know, we're not pretty much identical cars, then that's for me to figure out. For example, last year in Kansas, we showed up and I drove the track in one way in one section. He drove that section a different way, and he put like 8 tenths on me every single lap. And after that session, he was like, I did this time and I did this time. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so slow. And then, you know, I can pull the data and we can compare and we can figure out that I was making a line choice that was different. And then like, I can go make that tweak. So for me, the first benchmark is Andy, because as a driver, he's one of the best I know. And as a, from the car side, like we're in very similar equipment. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, definitely Eric and I mean, Jeremy Swenson, who's in the Corvette.
That's right. That's right.
Like he's in a very different vehicle package than we're in. So his strengths and our weaknesses tend to align and vice versa. But he's just, he came into GLTC from Time Attack and went on this crash course of learning racecraft and learning a new driving, like a racing model. You know, Time Attack is the single fastest lap. Racing is like a totally different rhythm to the weekend. And he got super good at it really fast. Mm. And became like the guy to beat. So he won the championship last year.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And having that sort of first, just watching somebody get into wheel to wheel racing and have to get good at it that quickly and succeed was like really impressive. So I have a ton of respect for Jeremy, but I also, he's kind of the benchmark for who to beat. And I know this, like this year, I don't think he's won a race since Coda, but he's, I think his finishing average position is like second, like 2.1 or something. Like his finishing thing. So he's the one that kind of pushes us at every, like, if it's not Andy or I, it's probably a purple Corvette.
For sure. For sure. That's awesome. Hopefully I didn't stir the pot too much. Cause I know, you know,
no.
The good thing is Tom, you're good at kind of being like, all right, I'm not, you know, like start too bad, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, okay.
We don't really race with anybody who's a problem. So like, we're basically all buddies. And awesome. When we're like, who's the one you worry about? It's like a friendly thing. It's not like a nemesis guy. Yeah. Maybe it'd be more fun for everybody else if we were nemesises, but nemesis.
All right. So I feel like when it comes to, you know, and not to, but I feel like you've kind of sealed the fate of how this season's going to end a little bit, you know, you know, that's just my personal opinion, you know. But what I wanted to kind of ask is when it comes to Tomo Racing and ASM Motorsports, is this where it stops? Is there something that you guys go further from here? What does the future look like for Tomo Racing?
I have no idea yet. Honestly, I did not expect this year to go like this, like at all, considering I was ending last year with a total race car. So I hadn't thought about it a lot. And one thing I did think about a lot over the last 2 years is if you were to put me down, you know, in my 21st birthday or something, 18th birthday, like, what are your goals in life? I would have put down like pro racing. I would have put down like factory driver. I would have put down driving certain, you know, track, whatever. And in the last 5 to 7 years, I got to do basically everything that I could come up with that I want to do, which when it ended kind of left me with like, well, now what do I want to do? I have no idea. And on one side, it's like, I've already done everything that I would want to do. But on the other side, now it's like, I get to do whatever I want. Like I can, so I have to remember to think that way. Like I can create whatever thing that I want to do next, just because I already accomplished all these other goals doesn't mean I can't set new ones. So I've been trying to think through like, what do I want to do? It's been kind of fun getting into like different disciplines. Like we do a lot of ice racing up here in Wisconsin. We do a lot of drifting with ASM. Robert Thorne's in Pro Spec Formula Drift at this point.
That's right. That's right. Yep.
I think they were head to head in the Grade 8
at
St. Louis. So anyway, like getting into that is really interesting, and it's all these new motorsports things that I've never been exposed to. I don't know. Like we've been starting to talk, like, I don't know if we want to race the S2000 in GLTC again next year. Maybe we want to go endurance racing, or maybe we want a totally different car, or, you know, there's tons of options, but I'm thinking of them a lot earlier than I thought I would have, because I thought I was going to be in a couple more seasons of GLTC with this car trying to master it. And now that we got it where it is, it's like, we got to keep coming up with new stuff, I guess.
It seems
really
like a good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have. That's why I asked the question, because I'm like, yeah, when you're so dominant and, you have to ask that question, like, what's next, you know? Because, you know, I mean, you could do another season and probably dominate again, you know, but that's just, you know, but then again, it's, you know, that's the fun part about it. And just like you said, you know, the sky's the limit, especially when it comes to motorsports in general. You know, there's so many options. And yeah, it's just one of those questions that I definitely wanted to ask you, you know?
Yeah, the hard part with grip racing is there's only so far you can go in the grassroots world before you're just into pro
that's level. Right.
So like the next logical step from GLTC would probably be something like that MX5 Cup or like that GR86 Cup that just got announced.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then immediately into $250,000, $500,000 budgets just to do something very similar to what we're doing now. So that's kind of why all these new disciplines are so interesting to me, because I don't have to go straight, you know, there to go higher than what I'm doing now is not such a stretch versus if I wanted to go higher level grip racing, there just isn't the dollar to do that. So
yeah.
Plus it wouldn't be rewarding. I think GLTC and grid life in general are like the best amplified, best vibes, best presentation, like all the opportunities are already there from it. So I kind of want to keep doing it to an extent.
Well,
but then there's also like endurance racing, which we could have one car and four drivers and a team of 8 people. And like, it's a way more community driven thing. In something like WRL or I don't know what, but seems like those S2000s should do pretty well there too, I would think.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that too, because from starting here to where grid life has gone now, and we're hoping that next year, that's kind of the stops one of the stops that we're going to make is Midwest, because that, you know, Midwest is a vibe in general. Like it's just, you know, there's so much going on and, you know, it's just honestly, it's probably definitely one of the top when it comes to like the growth in like Pro-Am and whatnot. It's just, it's a place to go to when it comes to this motorsport thing. Like they offer everything. And honestly, it's just, yeah, we're for sure fans of what Chris and the team over there have done. And yeah, man, I get you. I get why you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I would go anywhere else, because it's where you need to be right now at this point, yeah. You know. But all right, cool. So last thing I kind of want to get to is we have some fan questions. These are very generic questions. So we wanted to kind of ask you this and, you know, you answer them how you feel is best. All right?
Sure.
So, all right. What is Tom's daily driver? That's one of the questions that we got.
So I have a Lexus GX470 cool. SUV. And a Acura Vigor, like a 1993 Acura Vigor that I bought for $600.
Nice.
It's like a 5-cylinder front wheel drive Acura sedan. Sounds like an Audi. It's really cool, but I alternate whichever one has more gas in it.
All right, cool. All right. So another question. So from what we know so far, what are your thoughts on the new Civic Type R?
The new one.
Yeah,
I think it looks awesome. I think it looks a little more grown up. I think it looks like very, very handsome. The other one was like a little hot boy, and this one's like hot boy grew up and got a cool job, but he still has a little rowdy in him kind of thing. Like,
it's a great way to put it.
Do you think it's something that you see yourself hopping into and working on or no?
I would love to. So I do still have a pretty decent relationship with Honda. Like, even if I don't work with them, like I still have a relationship with all the engineers and all the people I met there. So I got to go to the Thunderhill 25-hour last year and just kind of crew on. They were running. What were we running? A new Civic. The new Civic.
SI?
Yeah. The sedan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a little bit of exposure to that. And like I know they'll probably get some Type Rs at some point or maybe like an Acura version of it if that ever happens. So maybe. I don't know. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So on one of the podcasts that I was listening to, you had mentioned that you're a big fan of Mexican food.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go more generic when it comes to the Mexican food. The question was Chipotle or Qdoba? Which one would you
do? Ooh. All right. So there's the question and then there's the topic. The answer to the question is Chipotle for sure.
Okay.
But when we're talking about Mexican, like I'm like a connoisseur of the Mexican restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And it's my favorite thing. After a day at the racetrack, like I want to go to a Mexican restaurant, and there's like requirements, right? So like when you're looking at Google Images or like maps and you find the right one, it has to have like the stylized chairs and like the right decor. Like it's got to have that vibe, right?
That's how you know it's legit.
Yep. Yeah. It better have like, I want the chips and the salsa on the table the same time my butt hits the seat. Like immediately there's chips and pulse on the table, right?
I get that. And that I get.
The margaritas has to come in like the little bowl. Like the little fishbowl chalice margaritas, like those are the, and then beyond that, I'm happy, whatever you serve me. Cause usually I'll be, you know, I'll have the margarita half gone and be full of chips.
So what's your go-to? But what's your go-to like plate? Like if you had to pick one, is it like a quesadilla? Is it
chicken fajitas?
Fajitas, okay.
How about you? Yep.
Me, normally just regular tacos, normally carnitas or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so Tom, if you ever, so my parents are from El Salvador. Have you ever had what we call a pupusa?
No, but I'm also aware that the Mexican restaurants I'm talking about are not real Mexican food or like anyway.
So next time, if you ever come this direction or for, you know, because last time actually when he actually came to Formula Drift to support his teammate and I didn't get to see you that time because we had left and bailed and you were with the team and whatnot. But the next time we run into each other, I definitely got to take you to have some Salvadorian food. I actually took Max to have a pupusa, which El Salvador and Mexico, we're kind of, you know, similar because it's right under Mexico and stuff like that. So basically what it is the same thing, the same ingredient that all, you know, Mexican food is, tortilla with stuff in it. So that's what it is. The next time you come out here, I got to definitely have you have some of that and make sure that the decor is right. Yeah, you know, we got to make sure that the margarita is right. Then the pupusa.
I'll go in there early and I'll buy chips and salsa. Down. We'll put it
chips
down before you guys
be out there. Yeah, all that. Yeah. All right. When it comes to what's your favorite music and genre? Like if you were out there, what are you listening to?
I like really upbeat. Somewhere in the like 80s retro synth wave, like disco realm.
I get that. Like, yeah.
I'm trying to think of a band to
So Max was kind of putting me on to Odessa. He likes Odessa.
Sure,
because it's kind of that vibe, I would think, right? No, what else? I don't know. I like, so now when we're talking about bands that I like it's they wear wigs and they're like a band. Oh man, it's not gonna come to my head right now. And then there's like a drummer in the background. Damn,
it's all right.
Yeah.
So
anyways,
like the go-to artist right now would be like
Krungbin.
What is it?
Krungbin.
I don't know that one.
No, I'll send it to you. I'll send you some. Okay. You'll probably dig it for sure.
Yeah. There's like TWRP is a really good one. They're like jam band, funk, synth, rock. I don't know how to describe. I don't know how to describe the genre that I listen to, but it's very specific. Sophie Tucker is really good. That's like kind of more DJ-y. I don't know what, but
okay. Nice. All right. So, and then this was actually a question from Max, and we kind of wanted to talk about it, is so on your build, you have a hashtag that says race as one, right?
Race as one.
It's hashtag race as one. What does that mean?
So that specific sticker, it's hashtag we race as one. It's actually from
we race as one. Okay.
Yeah. So Formula One has been doing a huge amount of like promotion with, you know, Pride months and just overall, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like everybody is equal and there's no room for unacceptance in Formula One. So a bunch of drivers have those We Race as One stickers. And if you remember, like the pace car had the rainbow on the side and there's usually like lots of stuff like that. But for me, it kind of expands bigger. I am gay and I've been out since I was 17 or 18. I've never tried to make a big deal of it. Pretty much everybody knows in every level that I've raced at and whatever. It's I've always had a really positive experience with being able to be myself without being very scared of it. And the more comfortable I've been expressing myself, the more accepting people have been in racing. So, you know, when I was 17, 18 and I was very shy and I didn't really want to, you know, make a big deal of it. I wanted to blend in. Versus now when I've got a freaking rainbow on my car and bleached blonde hair. And, you know, I present myself very differently now than I did then. But either way, I've always been fully accepted and empowered, really, is the right word, to be like whatever I want to be. So I was always hesitant to present that, especially the wrong way when I was pro racing, for sure. I did talk to Honda about like, you know, like maybe we could do some Pride Month activation or something. And they never quite knew what to do with it. I definitely didn't know what to do with it. But because I've always had such an empowering experience, I feel like it's important for me to help others have that too. So there's a couple of new organizations that came around that have helped me lean into that a little bit more, for lack of a better term. So Racing Pride is UK-based. They work with Formula One. They work with a lot of pro racing in the UK and Europe. And they just expanded into the US. So I'm one of their ambassadors. And Out Motorsports is based here in the US. And they're very much more like a grassroots hub. So I have like this pro racing down from the UK side from Racing Pride. And then Out Motorsports is like grassroots up here in the US. And just working with those groups and realizing the situation I'm in, especially now that I'm just racing for myself, it's like, I don't have to worry about Honda or pro racing or anything else. It's like just whatever I want to present. My first S2000, I had a rainbow on the bumper. And this current one, we did a Pride Month livery with a rainbow gradient all over the car. And then we kind of kept that with the ASM wrap that's now on it. It's got, you know, a nice rainbow-ish gradient.
Yep, yep. Kind of.
We saw either that. Way, if you'd have told me 10 years ago that I was going to race a rainbow car, I never would have believed you. But now it feels important, and it feels like I want to give back a little bit anyway, or
of course
help create that. And that's part of the reason I feel GridLife is they're partners with the same groups that I'm a partner with, or, you know, ambassadors for. They want to make sure that it's accepting. It's definitely the most diverse, whether it be race or gender or sexual orientation, whatever, of any motorsports org that I've been a part of. And I don't know, it just feels like if I got to have a good experience, I should create good experiences for others. So hopefully by me trying to be as authentic with myself as I want to be, then other people get to as well, which feels like the way it should be.
That's amazing, man. Like,
yeah,
I think that's one of the things that we emphasize here the most is, you know, when we have these conversations, we like to have conversations with people that are, you know, bring out their genuine selves. And at the end of the day, doesn't matter what your background is, where you come from, where it is. At the end of the day, we all have something in common, which is we love cars, and that should be it. And, you know, wherever they are, you know, whatever sexual orientation or where they come from or what race they are, it shouldn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But at the same time, representation like yourself and putting it out there, it's also a beautiful thing because, you know, we're all together, as this says, we race as one, man. We're just people, and we just want to be people, and we want to race together, and it shouldn't matter, you know? So that's awesome that you represent that, man. And, you know, we're obviously here to support you along the way as well, man.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I get every once in a while it'll come up with the like, well, why does it matter? And I know that the person that says that always comes from a good place. They're saying like, I don't care. Why should anybody else care? Why? But when you're going to your very first event ever as maybe you're, you know, even motorsports is mostly like white guys at most levels. Like if you're showing anything at motorsports and you're not anything but like a straight white male, you're immediately other in some way that makes it intimidating. So whether you're gay or a different race or a female showing up to motorsports, like all of those things, if you're not seeing yourself represented anywhere, it's going to be harder to be yourself going in. So on a level, yeah, why does it matter? But at the same time, if I can be that one reference point that makes someone else a little more comfortable, or, you know, any of the female drivers have a little bit of that platform going on, or any of the insert anything here, I think it's super important for that to be at least acknowledged rather than just like not talked about, because in the perfect world, it'll not be talked about ever, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's a hard thing because, you know, when you say that you want to, you know, you had a good time in all this and you want to be able to, you know, make someone else have the same kind of experience that you had, you don't get a lot of feedback on stuff like that. So, you know, it kind of might feel like you're kind of like the unsung hero in this. You know, if people are going to have an easier time because of it, because of you, you might not get that feedback right away, even though, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know up front that you helped someone. So, you know, sure. I think it's a great thing. It really is.
Yeah.
And completely necessary.
And I say this with is some sort of experience, like what you just said, you know, being from my background, being Latino and whatnot. And, you know, just like you said, sometimes it is a little intimidating because it's not someone that I could say, oh, this person looks like me. It's a little bit easier or I know this person has similar background to me. So it makes it easier for me to have that conversation with that person, you know. So having someone like you be a representative and let's say someone that comes with similar, you know, has a similar situation as yourself, it'd probably be like, well, if he could do it, I could do it too. And that honestly goes a long way. You know what I mean? Because it could change the course of a whole person's life, you know? So it's honestly like, I genuinely mean that's awesome that you're representing that way and putting it out there. You know what I mean? Because it's not easy. So, for sure.
Took a while, but I'm there.
Awesome. All right, so I think we've taken enough of your time. Tom, thank you so much for always joining us, for always like being willing to do these things with us, because I know you have a lot going on, and so we really appreciate your time.
Dude, I'm down anytime.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Also, congrats on Lime Rock. Oh, yeah. And congrats. A great season so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. What's coming up next? What's next for you and the team?
So coming up, we've got Robert's finale. He's leading the Pro Spec Championship in Formula Drift, so we're all going to that.
Hell yeah.
Basically like a heads-up match between he and Dmitry Brutsky, I think.
That's in Utah. Utah. Yep.
2 or 3 weeks. We have two more Grid Life events. Alpine Horizon is the last like normal season race, and then we have Kansas, which is the finale. Awesome. I've already won all 5 of my allotted weekends, so I just need to finish, I think, 12th. At the finale.
Damn.
Which I'm like, as long as the car doesn't break, that
yeah,
I don't know why I didn't say that.
Knock on wood.
I'm hopefully going to Autocross Nationals, solo nationals in a couple weeks, maybe try to win another championship there. I'm commentating the SCCA runoffs, so you can tune in to talk about racing instead of be the race car driver. Some coaching, and yeah, just keeping going.
Awesome. Well, you already know we wish you all the success. We're here if you need anything from us. Maybe you want to put these new wheels on. You tell me when you're ready.
Pretty cool.
All right. But thank you again, Tom. And you have a good one, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, man. See you later, Tom.
Yeah, man. So to me, I always say this when we end these conversations.
Ooh,
one
of my favorite things
about having these combos is getting real with some of you know our friends, me and Tom text all the time and stuff like that, and you know, I think this podcast gives you a doorway to be able to get personal with those people, but also if you're a fan of someone like Tom, you get to see another side of him, and I think that was beautiful. That last part of the conversation honestly was one of my favorite parts of a combo that we've had on this podcast alone.
You know, so. Of course, if you look at everyone's just, you know, stats and points after the races, you only see that kind of, you know, side of them, but there's a lot more to every single one of these racers, you know. Yep. Everyone has their own story, you know, everyone comes their own way.
Yeah. Well, anyways, guys, with that said, thank you so much for joining us on another beautiful Wheel Wednesday podcast. I say beautiful Wheel Wednesday podcast because I love to put positivity out there, because it's a beautiful Wednesday. Enjoy it, and I'm glad that you're here to join
Hype
it
is right
us.
On Friday.
That's right. So Hype is right. Last Friday. Yeah. This Friday, we're actually doing a car anatomy, which is our word for a car walk around that we're going to be doing of our guests, ASM S2000, which you're gonna be able to see in depth every part of that car. So if you had any inkling of what you wanted to see on that, this is the time to do it on Friday. We'll be dropping that. We're here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. as well as we go live on 2 p.m. where Scott kind of answers any questions that you guys want to answer. You come join us at 2 p.m. on our Instagram or Facebook, and we'll answer literally any question you want to ask. We'll answer it right then and there. Again, guys, thank you for joining us. And have a great one. Peace.